Off the ball
on News Talk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
Now, it was announced yesterday that the Dubai Duty-Free Irish Open will enter a new era from next year when five of Ireland's greatest ever players take over the hosting of the tournament. Rory McIlroy will remain involved as one of the five, alongside Patrick Harrington, Darren Clark and Graham McDowell, with Paul McGinley taking over the hosting duties in 2019. And Paul is on the line now. Evening, Paul.
Hi, evening.
So, in the space of 4 years, Rory McIlroy has transformed the Irish Open from a tournament that had no sponsor, looked to be on its last legs, to a tournament with a $7 million prize fund and some of the best players in the world turning up every July. No pressure for 2019.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've been fortunate in Ireland, to be honest. A number of things collided all at the same time, or roughly within the same time, which has propelled it. I mean, obviously, Rory being a big figure in the game of golf and him being Irish is huge, and his commitment to play it. I mean, that's first and foremost, that's the most important thing. And from there, you know, we got Dubai Duty Free then became involved, and then Rolex became involved and pushing the prize fund up. And the fact that we've got such huge support now over the last few years, I think it's got a new energy to it. It's in a really good place. You're right, it's a tough act to follow the last few years.
Rory's spoken quite a bit over the last few years that he wanted to make the Irish Open self-sustaining, that this really couldn't go on forever, that he couldn't dedicate that much time and energy throughout his career to getting players over, to satisfying sponsors. Have you spoken to him about why he felt now was the time to take a step back?
Yeah, I have, yeah, absolutely. And he's in a good space in terms of, you know, clearing as many things out of his schedule that are not absolutely necessary. And you know, one of them was the Irish Open. As much as he has enjoyed taking it over the last few years, he thinks that it is a drain on his time. He looks at his record and he analyzes how he's played in certain things. And, you know, four missed cuts out of five. I know there's a win in there at the same time, but that's not good enough for him. He wants to perform better. He wants to prepare better, particularly with the Open Championship coming to Portrush next year, and be free of any kind of responsibilities around the Irish Open. And hence, you know, it came from him, this idea of rotating it, and would we take up the mantle of rotating it. He has committed to playing, which is vital, obviously, and he's also committed to be the fifth in the rotation. So, we're obviously all aligned behind that, and, you know, give him the opportunity to do what he does best and focus on what's important for him at this stage in his career, which is winning major championships in particular.
Yeah, he does really seem to have realised over the last couple of years that his time is his most valuable commodity, and probably now with this new regime, realising that resting is also a pretty important part of his time as well. So a good opportunity for him to take a step back. It does mean it's a big role for you, and like, this seems like a relatively new phenomenon on the European Tour. We've seen it with the British Masters, where they've Lee Westwood, Luke Donald, Justin Rose on a rotation of hosting. Do you know exactly what hosting an Irish Open entails?
Well, I'll answer that question better next year when I get stuck into the throes of it. We've had a couple of off-the-record meetings on it so far. I'll be sitting with the European Tour in terms of, I guess it's a similar role in terms of the captaincy to Ryder Cup. You're sitting with the European Tour. You're not making decisions solely on your own. You know, there's a lot of reasons and things go into every decision that's made. And you have to kind of balance things up. So it's a little bit like that role. I mean, it's not the high profile of the Ryder Cup captaincy, obviously, but it is a little bit similar in that regard. You know, I'll have a say, but not a huge say in terms of the venue. And the European Tour will be involved. Dubai Duty Free will be involved. And as I say, more important than anything else, it's to get the quality of field, Nathan. That's what's really important for the Irish Open. And obviously, having Rory's commitment is huge. And hopefully, next year in 19 with the Irish Open so close at the moment, it looks like it's going to be 2 weeks before the Open in Portrush, and hopefully some Americans will come over and we'll have a really strong field wherever it may be played.
2019 does look as though, well, it is going to be a pretty unique year for Irish golf, with both the Irish Open, the Open Championship taking place within a couple of weeks of each other. Obviously, it does present opportunities in terms of attracting the big name American players and players from around the world. Does as well, I guess, present an issue in terms of making sure that the Open at Portrush doesn't completely overshadow the Irish Open.
Yeah, I guess that's important too. Yeah, I think it looks like we're going to be 2 weeks before on the schedule. That won't be confirmed till later in the year. It's unlikely that Scotland are going to give up their date the week before. So if that's the case, I think more important than anything else, we need to move away certainly from Northern Ireland. So, you know, I'm looking at somewhere in the south of Ireland, I would say, and that's the indication so far. If you kind of draw a line across from Dublin across, it's unlikely to be anywhere north of there. It'll be somewhere in the south. And open up a new market commercially, which is obviously important for the Irish Open, and also in terms of hopefully getting big crowds. You know, and the third thing, I think it's quite clearly it'll be on a links golf course next year as well. It would be, it wouldn't be very very shrewd if we were to move it to an inland course in Ireland 2 weeks before the Open is going to be played on a links course in Ireland. So, I think those are the requirements and the kind of broad details we've discussed so far.
It is hard to underestimate the impact that McIlroy's support had on the Irish Open in terms of his name now and his ability to bring sponsors on board and the ability to get big names. We've had the likes of Ricky Fowler, Ernie Els, Hideki Matsuyama, John Rahm over the last couple of years. He must have put a huge amount of personal capital into it, particularly in terms of his time. Like, when you were approached about this and thought about this, is it a job that's going to require you putting in a lot of personal capital, calling in a lot of favours that maybe you could have saved for again?
Yeah, I don't think so, to be honest. I mean, I if I call Ricky Fowler, for example, I don't think he's going to play the Irish Open if he puts if I put a phone call in. Whereas Rory McIlroy does, you know, there's a good chance it'll happen. And that's the way it works at the top level. They all support each other. They support each other's foundations and they support requests from each other. And Rory is certainly aligned in terms of going forward, not just next year, but going forward in that where, you know, you scratch my back, I scratch yours kind of thing. That's what happens. So hopefully we will get some Americans coming in particular with a view to preparing for the Open, which will be on 2 weeks after the Irish Open, it looks like, in Portrush. So, yeah, I think that's hopefully what we're aiming at. But, you know, I think, to be honest, once we have Rory and we once have the top European... I think, you know, everything else is kind of a bonus after that. And, you know, the biggest thing is that Rory is going to play himself. He's obviously a huge draw, probably the biggest draw, arguably the biggest draw in golf, you'd have to say, outside of Tiger.
Yeah. The other thing, I guess, that attracts players is prize money. And if you're telling these leading American players that at the moment they're coming for $7 million, I know Colin McLaughlin, who is the man behind Dubai Duty Free, after the last Irish Open in Port Stewart, said like his ambition is to get the Irish Open to $10 million. Is that another side of it from your point of view of trying to drive that sponsorship that, all right, well, maybe you can't pick up the phone to Ricky Fowler, but if you put a prize fund in place that's more attractive, maybe you do get all these leading players?
I wouldn't be in favour of that personally, Nathan, to be honest. I think $7 million is an incredible prize fund, over $1 million first prize. And I, you know, I don't think we need to focus on driving that. There's other things we can focus on that are more important. I think the quality of the experience for the fans who come along to watch, for example, will be one. You know, if there was extra funds, I would like to invest that at ground level a little bit more and create a better experience, create an awesome experience in the Tented Village, for example, and maybe even lowering the prices, all of those things, if we had extra funds, rather than putting it right onto the top in terms of our prize money. I think $7 million is a huge amount of prize money, and it's unlikely it's going to increase from there.
How's the Irish Open and the European Tour doing on that front, on providing the family experience on a day out? Like, I know typical Irish Open weather, they were probably unfortunate at Port Stewart last year when they put on the concerts. It was lashing rain, I think, on both evenings. But you look at what happened last week at the Phoenix Open, where they're getting over 200,000 people on one day for what essentially at this stage seems as though it's just a drinking session. Like, is that an example you can look at some of the bigger American tours as to how they draw crowds in and the sort of entertainment package they put together?
Yeah, I think you got to take out the Phoenix Open. I mean, that's isolated. There's no other event in sport that attracts that kind of crowds or accommodates that kind of crowds. I think you certainly could. The only tournament that could rival that would be the Ryder Cup. If you open the gates in the Ryder Cup, you could get 200,000 people quite comfortably. In fact, you could get more if you wanted to. But for health and safety as well as visibility, you know, you want to be able to see and you want people to be able to come and actually watch the golf instead of having to... you know, watch from 20 deep in a crowd around the green. So you've got to balance all of those things up. I think we've been lucky the last few years. We've had huge crowds in the Irish Open. And, yeah, I think it's, of course, we want a big crowd because a big crowd creates a good atmosphere. A good atmosphere adds to the tournament, it adds to the excitement for the players, and it also adds to what we watch on TV and the output that we have as a tournament and a product, if you want to call it that. So the crowds are very important, and I will certainly make a focus on that and trying to entice as many people as possible you know, that is a big focus. I think you can't really have a great tournament without massive crowds. So the bigger the crowds, the better.
So it's been a really interesting start to 2018 in golf. We've had the return of Rory. We've had the return of Tiger. We've had some good finishes in Dubai and Abu Dhabi. Some really interesting playoffs on the PGA Tour. On Rory and the way he's come back from this 3.5 month hiatus, which he's talked up for so long as he felt he really needed this break to sort of recalibrate his life in every aspect of it. Nobody quite knew exactly what was that going to result in when he emerged on the course. It seems from afar couldn't have gone much better. A third place finish, a second place finish. What are your thoughts on how his game is?
I think it's too early to say yet in the season. I mean, he's played in absolutely ideal conditions on golf courses that are absolutely made for him. Certainly his game looks sharp. But, I mean, the golf courses aren't difficult for him, to be honest. I mean, he's killing all the par fives at the length he hits the ball. He's not wild off the tee. So he's generally, even if he misses a fairway, he's so far up, he's going to get it on the green with a 6 or a 7 iron. Certainly a lot of the odds were in his favour over those 2 weeks. Having said that, he did perform very well. I thought his chipping and putting, the bit that I saw in particular, were very strong, you know, things that we always look on, upon as possible weaknesses for him. So that it was all good. It was all good. I know he didn't win, but I don't think any of us could have an argument to say he doesn't have the heart to win. I mean, we all know, we've seen him perform on the big occasions. He certainly got that. So that will come in time. I think the next few weeks are the next, as he leads into the Masters, you know, things change a little bit. You know, the examination that he's had over in the Middle East in totally generic, perfect conditions are going to change a little bit, although the weather forecast is good this week in Monterey. He's going to have good weather out in Cypress Point. But the greens are going to be bumpy. Poana greens are notoriously difficult to put on. A lot of players don't play in the tournament because of the Poana greens. Mm. They won't play the California swing because of them. Tiger would never, very rarely, I think only when he had to, did he ever play the AT&T when he was in his prime for that reason. So I think it's not just a test, though, of the ball bouncing around the place on these Poana greens he's going to face the next few days, and indeed in L.A. next week. But it's also a taste of patience. You've got to have a lot of patience to be able to play on Poana greens. And then the other test that he's looking forward to seeing from him this week is Pebble Beach is an old-fashioned golf course in terms of most of the greens slope from back to front. There's places you can miss it and places you can't. And so his distance control, something that hasn't been terrific for his game, certainly last year, is going to be under scrutiny. And his ability to control spins going into these greens that slope from back to front. They're all things that I'm kind of looking for, a lot deeper than just what the score is. Mm. Because I don't think we learned a whole lot in the Middle East, to be honest, as I say, because, you know, every odd that you could put in his favour was in his favour in the Middle East. But that won't be the case next week. And then, of course, when he moves across to Florida as well, you know, you get a little bit more wind, you get the grainy greens down in Florida. And again, another test of where exactly he's at. So I think all in all, another month's time down the road, we'll have a really good broad idea of what his chances are of performing well in Augusta and how well this 3 month sabbatical he's had has kind of worked in his favour.
So much of what we talk about when we wonder about Rory's game and his ability to go and win more major titles is his putting and what he does on the greens. But as you mentioned there, maybe his approach play and his distance control, he's struggled with a lot over the last couple of years. Why is that?
Oh, that's a long story. That, I mean, my personal view is that he creates so much speed. I'm going to get technical here a little bit.
That's fair enough.
The way Dustin Johnson plays, for example, he plays with a fade. He comes across the ball. You know, the old story from Lee Trevino, the old line, you can talk to a fade, but a hook won't listen. Now, he hits the ball vast distances with that little baby fade, and that's a great shape to have, particularly when it comes to wedges. It's a lot more controllable. Whereas Rory's is a little bit more, I hate using this term, but it's a little bit more of a flippy action. It's a little bit more from the inside, and he releases the club a lot more. And I think it's a lot more difficult to control wedges when you are coming from the inside the way Rory tends to do. Now, if you look at Rory when he plays his best, he comes across the ball a lot more, and he does play with that little held off. That's when he's normally at his best, and that's when I think he can control his distances better. So, sorry for going a bit technical there in the answer, but that's my personal view, my personal view on it. But I know he spent a lot of time this 3 month sabbatical. I know he spent a lot of time, you know, dialing in numbers on the TrackMan, which is something that Dustin Johnson has been doing now very successfully for the last couple of years. So that is certainly a part of his game he needs to improve.
And Dustin Johnson puts that improvement in his game basically down to starting to practice, that he never liked practicing, suddenly spent a lot more time practicing his short irons, and he's now one of the best players in the game. With Rory then, and you say so, when he's at his very best and when he's strutting down the fairway and he maybe does come across the ball and he does get that little fade, like, is that a technical thing that he's improving, or is it that he's just such a confidence player that he can overcomplicate at times if he's overthinking things?
I think one feeds the other. You know, his confidence feeds from his technique being in good place. I know there's a lot of people, I know I have had these arguments with Pavlik so many times. What comes first, the technique or the mental game? You know, and he's very much fair that it's all about mental game and, you know, the technique follows. But I don't quite see it that way. I think when you're swinging the club well and you have the ball under control, the confidence will flow from there. And when I see Rory kind of holding off his shots through the ball, that's when I feel he plays his best. And I know he works a lot on that with Michael Bannon, so he doesn't change planes too much in the downswing. If you watch Rory, when he's not playing well, there's a big drop on the downswing, and he gets underneath it, and then he gets a bit flippy. That's when he's at his worst. And it's one of the reasons why I think Dustin Johnson is so successful. I mean, you look at Vijay Singh as well, and Retief Goosen's another one come to mind. They get to the top, and it's almost like an over-the-top move on the downswing. In other words, they're keeping the club very similar plane on the way down as they do on the way back. Jordan Spieth is another who does that very successfully. And I think it's a great way of consistency, and it's also a really good way of controlling distances. And I think if you look back through the history of the game, most of the really good controllers of distances have been faders of the ball rather than drawers of the ball. You know, go back to Trevino, I mean, go back as far as you want, but Nicklaus as well. You know, it was very much about controlling the ball. And to control the ball with that fade, the club needs to be coming down on a similar plane on the downswing than it did on the backswing.
Harrington spoke before about his belief was that he thought Rory could get to double figures with majors, but that he needed to win them quickly, because when you look at the American collegiate system, they're just churning out Rory McIlroys, guys who are well-built, athletic, who can bomb the ball 320 yards straight down the fairway. And that seems to have come true very quickly when you look at players like Justin Thomas and what John Rahm has done over the past few months. Rory's next 18 months, is this a career-defining 18 months for him?
I don't think so. I'd never put that kind of pressure on him. That's too much pressure to put on somebody. So you're either going to make it or break it in 18 months and, you know, put all that attention on him. I think what he's got to do is give himself the best opportunities. Going back to your first point there about the kind of players that are coming out on tour one after the other, I think that the tour setups, the course setups are playing into their hands to produce this kind of player. And I'd like to see, you know, and then when you get to the exam that a major is, it's normally very different than it would be week in, week out on the PGA Tour and the European Tour. I think the courses have become a little bit bland. The greens are a bit too soft. There's not enough rough. There's not enough premium on hitting the ball on the fairway. And I think there's a big movement. There's too much of a movement in terms of pacifying the players with perfect conditions every week and with soft fairways and soft greens. That's what makes it easy for players. You know, you looked last year at the US Open, nearly 8,000 yards long, the longest golf course we've ever seen in history of any tournament ever played, and yet you had Brooks Koepka take it apart and nearly shoot 20 under par and winning that US Open. So length is not the answer. The answer, you know, I'd like to see courses set up where a lot more guile is required. You know, Pebble Beach is a great U.S. Open venue, because when they get those greens firm, which we won't see this week, but when they get them firm for the U.S. Open, there's such a high premium on distance control. And you go over the back of a lot of those greens, you're absolutely stone dead. No matter. So watching Tiger, and you know, I was watching a couple over the Christmas there, watching Jack Nicklaus and Tom Watson play around there in a Shell Wonderful World of Golf. And both of them were in their 50s, but very competitive. But to watch their course management around there on a golf course that was playing firm that day with a little bit of breeze was incredible, because I know the course so well. And what I miss so much about watching golf on TV nowadays is the frustration of it's all on the front foot. Gung-ho, gung-ho, gung-ho. There's not really a whole lot of premium on short-sighting and missing yourself. Everything is coming out of the barrel, trying to overpower a golf course, bring us to a knees and get to 20 under par. And I'd like to see that change, but that's a whole different story in terms of, you know, how golf courses and how the tours are run.
Yeah, and I know you're working for Sky Sports, and I'm not sure what their viewing figures were for the opening few weeks of the year. And in America, it seems so wound about what Tiger does, and if he turns up, that the viewing figures go up. But certainly our sense from presenting a golf podcast and all the feedback we're getting is that, by and large, people are finding these PGA Tour, the run-of-the-mill events, quite boring. That staying up at a Sunday night maybe isn't the attraction it once was, because it is just 22, 23, 24 under par, somebody bombing it down the middle. There's no even real chance of a collapse because it's almost too easy.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue against that point at all, Nathan. And I think it's a very valid point. It's something I'm very passionate about. And, you know, technology and the fitness of the guys and the distance they hit it now, they just overpower the golf course. But the golf course also are being set up perfect. I mean, when do you see a guy get a bad lie in a bunker now, for example? I know, you know, I mean, Jack Nicklaus...
Paul Dunn at Abu Dhabi. Or Paul Dunn in Dubai, was it, actually?
Yeah, okay, I saw that. Yeah, that was terrible. But it's generally, I mean, the quality of bunker play is perfect. But you've got to also say, I mean, the bunkers are set out perfectly on all the tours nowadays. The caddies get raked if they don't rake them caddies get fined if they don't rake them perfectly. So, you know, you're always having generally a perfect lie onto a soft green. So there's not a high premium back in the days of Nicklaus and that, where it was about course management and guile. And for me, sport is at its best. I mean, we saw the rugby last weekend. Sport is at its best, no matter what it is, when there's volatility in the scoring. And what we don't have in golf, my view at the moment, is enough volatility. Mm. And it's because the players have become so good and the conditions have become so good, the courses are presented so good and the greens are so soft that we're not having that volatility. There's not a high premium on course management the way it might have been. And there certainly is a lot more of a high premium on course management when it comes to major championships. And also you've got the nerves involved in winning a major championship. Guys are a lot more nervous, and when they're nervous, they make mistakes. So there's a combination of factors, but I'd be in agreement with that argument that golf is becoming a little bit too one-dimensional. Overpowering a golf course, racing to the finishing line on the front foot of 20 under par is great, but we don't want to have it every week, and that's what we seem to be seeing on both European and PGA tours.
Just before we wrap, Paul, a quick word on Tiger. We had Peter Lowry on last week's Golf Weekly, and he was saying that the way Tiger was hitting the ball off the tee, that he had no miss. He had no idea, was it going to go left, was it going to go right? And for a lot of players, that's a problem you never get over. Now, Tiger's not a lot of players, but from what you've seen from, I guess, his real return at Torrey Pines, is he going to be in a position to win tournaments again, or are expectations too high?
I think a little bit too early to say, first of all. The second thing is his game is a lot better than I expected it to be. I mean, I was at the President's Cup last year in New York in September, and I was at his press conference when, I mean, he basically talked like a guy who was going to give up the game, and he talked about, you know, my best
years
behind
me,
and if it is, have to retire in the morning, so be it. And kind of everybody, all the press guys there walked out saying, well, you know, we'll be lucky to see Tiger back at all. All of a sudden, 3 months later, we see him coming back with a ball speed of 181, which is incredible, off the charts. To be coming back from, you know, 2 months later to be able to perform that. I thought he did really well in San Diego in terms of his finishing position. To play as poorly as he did, and I watched a lot of it, to play as poorly as he did in terms of missing fairways and to be able to chip and putt, and again, course management was a factor, and he was good at that. In fact, that was probably one of the best tournaments we've seen, San Diego. The golf course played very difficult on the Sunday. That was a real enjoyment to watch that, because there was volatility that day, because there was quite a bit of breeze and the greens were firm. And I thought he did really well. So the question for me with Tiger is, I think he fixed that. I think he was nervous. I think he was nervous. I know myself, having had 8 operations coming back after knee surgery, even the short bit that I did, you know, even though you might be a top player on the tour, you're still very volatile and you're still a bit nervous and apprehensive coming back after injury. So I can only imagine what it was like for him, particularly with the profile that he has and the expectation on his shoulder. So I'm sure he was very nervous in terms of anticipation going into that event. So I thought he did really well. The big question for me, Tiger, going forward is I think he'll become more comfortable, and I think he'll get more comfortable with his golf swing and play more shots as he gets more comfortable. The question I really want to see is, where is he going to be at mentally? Is he going to be the absolute ruthless assassin that we saw in the best, you know, when he was at his best? Can he regain that? That's what I want to see, because I think if he did regain that, it would be a real good contrast to the kind of buddyism that we see from a lot of the top players at the moment in the game. And that will be a great dynamic for us to all kind of watch and observe and enjoy.
Yeah, we want to see Tiger be a bastard again, essentially. that's what's really good for golf. Paul, thanks as always for taking the call.
Pleasure. You're welcome. Thank you.
Off the Ball on Newstalk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.